This episode of Youth Ministry Booster is brought to you by Grow Curriculum and Strategy. Grow provides everything you need to teach and disciple your students, train and celebrate your leaders, and partner effectively with parents. Buy from youthministrybooster.com/grow and get a year of Youth Ministry Booster so that you can partner, support, and grow as a youth minister as you grow your youth ministry. Get all of Grow and all of Youth Ministry Booster for a year for the price of Grow at youthministrybooster.com/grow. What is up, everybody? It's episode 179 of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. It's an interview episode with one of our new friends, Dr. Philip Nation. We had Dr. Nation on as a webinar guest for our booster members earlier last month, and so that replay is available to our member folks, talking about disciple making and habits for holy leaders. Dr. Nation is an author, a speaker, and has served a regional, national, and international organizations, as well as pastoring in the local church with a really unique story and tie to youth ministry as well. And so if you're a member of Youth Ministry Booster, you can check out that replay and the ways in which we get connected with some really great, amazing leaders of the church, authors, speakers, ministers, every month, hosting new and exciting live conversations for folks to ask their question and learn from some of the leading thought runners and the things related to ministry and leadership. And so we love having those conversations. And so for this, we wanted to do a double, and we wanted to get a podcast recording squeezed in with some of our webinar time with Dr. Nation. And so you're going to love this episode as we talk about disciple making as a spiritual discipline. Dr. Philip has worked at every level, whether it was the local church or now where he serves as an international leader for the Baptist World Alliance. So he's seen a few churches and he's seen a few different places where disciple making is working and not working, and has some great insights to that. So thanks for listening to the podcast. If you haven't had a chance to follow along, make sure to hit subscribe, rate, and review, and all of those amazing things. We are excited for the month of May. It's the new drop for Grow Volume 3, and you can check out those links and other show notes in the lines below where you can get Booster and Grow and goodness all for one great price. But until the flippity flip of the end, I'll see you then. Hey, everybody, we are here on the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast with our new friend, Dr. Philip Nation, who is a good Baptist boy, who's done a lot of in ministry in a lot of different ways. And so for all of my youth ministry friends that are Enneagram 7s, Dr. Nation is wired like you're wired, because not only is he taking on new projects, but taking on new professions and careers. So you're in Florida now, working for the Baptist World Alliance and helping in churches. But give us a little bit of how you're doing today, and then I want to hear the story of your relationship to youth ministry, because you can't be this deep into faith, Christianity, and the church and not have some great youth ministry story.
Oh, my goodness. I've got some great stories. Well, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's exciting to be able to share a little bit of my journey and how I got to where I am. But how I'm doing today, it's a pretty interesting season of life. My wife, her name is Angie, and then we've got two sons, Andrew and Chris, that are both in their early 20s. Andrew has finished college, and he's got a job here in the area. And then Chris is in his last year at Houston Baptist University. He's actually headed into ministry as well. Recently proposed to his girlfriend. And so we're going to be getting a female, another female.
Expanding the family. Yeah, good, good.
Oh, yeah. So it's an interesting season of life as I've moved into work with the Baptist World Alliance to more of a global mission organization to help network the Baptist family across the world. It's cool.
Which is a big and diverse family. I mean, you talk about expanding the family. That's a very big and diverse family. So.
Oh, yeah. You go everything from what some of us here in America would almost refer to as the fundamentalists that are kind of the Baptist unions and some of maybe the former Soviet Union bloc countries to those that would be kind of more centrist theologically in Europe and North America. But it's really amazing, and so as this airs, it will be a couple of weeks past that there were some horrific bombings on Easter Sunday in Sri Lanka, and specifically to some churches. And we've already had some interaction with the leader of the Baptist Union in Sri Lanka and just kind of praying for him and for all of those believers as they minister to a country that's in chaos. Yeah. So it's an opportunity to support those that are in pain and to celebrate those that are seeing great success in ministry.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Now, you asked, what is my relationship to youth ministry?
So I got to believe that a guy that's this deep in on the church, both locally and globally, either you had an amazing youth ministry experience or a terrible one. And it's both. Like, you can't be neutral. This is not chaotic neutral. You can't be like, well, I never really. No, either you grew up in an amazing youth ministry and has propelled you and deepened you, or it was a rejection of what youth ministry was to what the church ought to be that brought you here today. Am I close?
You're really close, because I had a really amazing youth ministry that I was a part of, and then was probably the leader of some really awful ones.
Okay.
In my early days of ministry. So I grew up in the Deep South in Birmingham, Alabama. You would never know that from my Southern drawl, we were a part of a church that was growing, that was doing great stuff locally. And we went through seasons of youth ministry based on who the youth minister was, from very discipleship oriented, very deep in your faith kind of oriented, to very, let's expand the base, very evangelistic, and lots of kind of evangelistic efforts and events. But all along the way, there were these solid volunteer leaders in the life of the church that just absolutely poured into us. And very specifically, there's a guy named Matthew that is about 8 years older than me, who he's the guy who personally discipled me, reshaped everything that I understood about church life and how personal the journey could be. And so I had an amazing kind of experience as a teenager and a college student in youth ministry. And then when I got into college and was beginning in ministry, and so of course they take 18 and 19 year olds and put them in charge of the 15 through 16 and 17 year olds and say, and now take all these people to Daytona Beach.
It's like, responsible for their travel and well-being. It's fine.
Right. Yeah, who brought this system up? And so one of the first churches I served, we did a discipleship weekend, D-Now weekend. And I had these four teenage boys in the group. They were in high school. And at the end of the weekend, my two buddies that came in to lead the guys group, which are a youth group, it was like 18 on a normal, you know, kind of Wednesday, 25 on a really exciting day. But after it was all over, my buddies who came in to lead the guy side, they sat me down and they said, "Philip, we just want you to know that you, in fact, do have the four horsemen of the apocalypse in your youth group." It was a difficult journey that, you know, we had to traverse, but, you know, that's youth ministry. Everybody out there listening, they're like, no, I have them. Philip only thought he had them.
Right. I have the ones of 2019, but how important has that been, though, I think, in framing some of the work you've been about, both academically and institutionally, and now even globally? Like, I mean, that really, for as big as the net that you want to cast or draw, at the end of the day, like, it is, you know, it's like guys like Matthew that are discipling, and then it's the stories of these middle school boys that are just not quite there yet, but they are showing up to a biblical community, so there's still hope. Like,
yeah, they're well, the hope is far away. And the light is very dim, but no, you're exactly right. Because Matthew, I'm not the only one that Matthew discipled, and he did spend what seems like an inordinate amount of time with me, and I'm very grateful for it. But there are other guys along the way that Matthew also poured his life into in that kind of very close quarter combat of discipleship. And then these churches where I served as a bivocational youth minister, a couple of them along the way during my college and seminary days, they were hard, and it was tough soil, and They were teenagers that, you know, were there because their parents drug them there. And though it sounds like a fictional, you know, this mythological story that goes around ministry, it actually did happen to me, where I was sitting on a Wednesday afternoon in my church office. I was at the time 20 years old, and a mom of one of those four guys walked into my office on that Wednesday afternoon. It was the only day of the week that I would actually go to the church office. And she walked into my office to talk to me about her son. And she wrapped up the conversation by saying to me, "I need you to fix my kid." Mm. And that is one of those memories that has just hung with me, that discipleship in the life of the church, that one, there are parents that feel like they're drowning because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because no one ever discipled that mom. She didn't even know what discipleship really looks like. And then two, she was just at her wit's end and just wanted somebody, anybody, even the 20-year-old knuckleheaded youth minister that I was, to step into the framework of her son's life to try to give, you know, some kind of boundary markers of grace and mercy and holiness, and this is what it looks like to follow Jesus. So those were, you know, at times I kind of laugh and kid about them, but those are defining moments to help, yeah, you then to see this is what the real work of ministry is.
Do you think that there is a deficit there for a generation of folks, again, in your work in both kind of local church, national institutions, and kind of the global economy of churches? Is there an American problem of parents? I mean, technology and everything that has shaped the ways in which we communicate and commune is all new. And then there's the really fabulous quote that we're living in a generation where parents are having to learn the technology and parent the technology.
Yes.
Like, you know, my mom and the dad taught me how to drive a car because they learned how to drive a car. My mom and dad are having to learn social media while they're trying to, like, you know, keep up with the grandkids on, you know, FaceTime or Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
But do you think it's a spiritual thing too? Do you think that there's some aspects of discipleship that are just kind of have gone missing? And so when parents enter this like kind of crisis, is it a cultural crisis pressing on their discipleship, or is there a missing discipleship element to face whatever the cultural shift is?
I would actually say that it's more than a cultural crisis, because we're always going to have those, and historically they're always going to exist from the beginning of time to the end. This is more of a church crisis.
Okay. That
would be my assessment. Because when you speak about the issue of technology, I think you're right on. I, as somebody who is in my late 40s, as late in your 40s as you can get, that's right.
48, yeah, I got it.
I am an immigrant to the technological landscape. And so I have to have my green card when I come in. Yeah. And I'm the one who keeps messing up all the social media platform that keeps driving all the Gen Z, the millennials and the Gen Zs out of it. And whereas my sons and the kids that are coming into middle school that are younger than my sons, they're native to this generation.
Yeah.
This is their culture that they are native to. And so, but those things always exist, whether it was the printing press or the fax machine or the cell phone. You know, there's always going to be a next gen technology that people are going to use to communicate. And so what I would say is I am, and this may not be completely historically accurate, this is more anecdotal, I am the product. My generation,
okay,
we are the products of the first fully formed youth ministry generation.
Okay.
I graduated from high school in 1987.
Okay. So that kind of the Gen Xer, like kind of the younger Gen Xers, the oldest millennials, like that, yeah, kind of, yeah.
And so youth ministry had its opportunity to move from the Jesus movement and the hippies of the West Coast,
yeah,
and migrated into the Bible Belt of the U.S., where it became institutionalized, because that's what we do. Yeah. You know, I can say that as a guy who grew up there, went to high school there, went to college there, went to seminary there. It's what we did. is we institutionalized everything that is evangelical, and we turn it into an ism rather than allowing it to live and breathe. And so I really am part of the generation that is the product of the first formalized youth ministry generation. I had lots of conferences and lots of books and lots of experts. And within all of that, even though I grew up in what I think is as healthy of a version of that as it is, in general, when I talk to people my own age who also grew up in that environment, and I talk to them about Matthew, who discipled me for 3 years, nobody else has that story.
Okay.
That's a missing element. Everybody has the stories of fifth quarters and concerts and choir tours. Everybody else has the stories of the Wednesday night blowout event of dodgeball for Jesus and all of the rest that goes with it that were the gathering events. But I find very few people who have the deepening relation, the relationships that took them deep into their faith that would then withstand this onslaught of all of the cultural changes that we would face.
Okay. Well, that's our segue then, because that's where I wanted our conversation to go today in regards to what you wrote in Habits for Holiness as disciple making as a spiritual discipline. So obviously there's some really great notes that you borrow from some of the forefathers and forerunners and mothers of writing about spiritual disciplines and practices and faith. And being a contemplative Baptist, I've read a lot of them, but I had never seen you group disciple making in the same kind of categories as like solitude and celebration. It used to all, I mean, like disciple making was like a separate function. So there was like evangelism, there's like your own personal spiritual disciplines, but you have integrated this notion of disciple making into the faithfulness and fruition of being a deepened disciple. And I want to hear about that idea in the context of a youth minister that buys into it, but still has to plan summer camp. And so, because I think everybody would hear what you said about Matthew and go, yes, I want to do that.
Right.
But there also is an expectation in living in the middle of institution and then maybe innovation. Like at the end of the day, there's still got to be Sunday school of some kind. They're still expecting me to have some kind of midweek activity for the students. And if I don't go to camp, that one like sweet grandma in the church that's just ready to cut a check for a kid is going to be really mad and want to cut me. And so like what is the way in which disciple making can be, again, not separate, but integrated into the life of a youth ministry that maybe would tell a better story than fifth quarter?
Well, and I appreciate your kind words about the book, Habits for Our Holiness, because at the tail end of it, I wrap in both the ideas of leadership and disciple making as spiritual disciplines. And like you, I think I'm kind of a contemplative kind of Baptist without getting weird about it. There are some weird, I mean, I'm not walking around a prayer labyrinth and I don't have a Zen garden that I'm raking rocks.
Hey man, I got high church friends. Yeah. Smells and bells, man. Smells and bells. Yeah.
Smells and bells.
I like it when the church smells like the worship. Yeah.
I like it when worship smells like coffee. That's my smell. And then, you know, loud guitars, those are my bells.
Yeah.
So for me, disciple making is it's why I wrote the book, because I believe that the spiritual disciplines are missional at their very core. And so I have deeply benefited from other writers about spiritual disciplines, from ancient fathers all the way through the modern era. John Ortberg, Richard Foster, he wrote kind of the classic that everybody refers to. Dallas Willard and Don Whitney, all of these people have written some great books. Chuck Swindoll, one of the really well-known author of the last few decades, wrote a book on spiritual disciplines as well. I love all of these. Where I found the place that I didn't think had been addressed is that the purpose for which you engage in the spiritual discipline is not just so that you will be driven so deeply into your prayer closet that you cannot see the rest of the world, is that they propel you through the normal paces of your life so that the gospel can show up in such a way that other people would be persuaded by it. And so disciple making, I think, is the natural fruit of a well-formed Christian walk. Because just making disciples, one of the things I say in the book, has the greatest of eternal implications. Because you're helping somebody else now into their own relationship with Christ. Mm. So how does this relate to youth ministry? Because you're right. That little old lady in the church who wants to cut a check, she's also, looking sideways at the boys that are on the third row that are still wearing their baseball caps.
Right. Get them out of this church. Get them to camp. Get them saved.
That's right. Bless Jesus.
Yes.
And bless their hearts. Mm. In all of this, I think to the youth ministers that are listening and those that work with teenagers and maybe even some parents that are listening, ultimately, this comes down to what is your final goal?
Yeah.
You can have all of these intermediary goals. We want to get them gathered. We want them to be under the teaching of the word. We want them to have fun. We want them to be, in a place where they can build friendships that are productive rather than destructive. But ultimately, why are you cobbling all these things together?
Yeah.
And it does come down to, are you trying to just create an evangelical version of an Amish community where the youth group is just a holding tank with pizza where you're trying to make sure that nobody fornicates? Or, I know you want to laugh, everybody out there listening. Take a deep breath.
That's it. Well said. Yeah. Pepperoni and purity, right? That's it.
Hey, there's your new tagline right there.
Oh, gosh. No,
somebody's going to use that as a subtitle for a book now. Effective Youth Ministry in the 21st Century, Pepperoni and Purity. Or is it that we say, ultimately, what we want to do with these students is not take them through a series of morality tales so that we can just modify their behavior?
Yeah.
What we want is for them to be fully formed followers of Jesus. And that is possible while he or she is a teenager.
Mm.
I mean, don't you think, Zach, that there are a lot of youth leaders that think that they're just getting groundwork done so that kids can become real disciples when they become adults?
I think there's a lot of addressing the immediate discomfort with immediate correction, right? So it's the, let's keep boys and girls separate so that way they don't date or do this, or like, let's, and I think we go back to the earlier conversation. I had a mom share a few weeks ago, like she's really worried about her son listening to music with cuss words. Like that was, for her, that was like the pinnacle of what was going on. And in my head, I was like, oh, if that was his only problem, right? Like if that, for me, like there was like, oh, there's so much more than that. And being able to address some of those concerns, I think at the depth of what's going on, like she just wants him to edit his music selection.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe like a broader, bigger picture of discipleship would encourage him to just practice some more silence instead of filling his head with more music. And I think that's one of the things that like, there's a youth ministry model that's just like, okay, they're really into video games. Let's sub in a Christian video game. Right. Or they're really, worried about this, relationship status. So let's just have a campaign that Jesus is your boyfriend. None of it really addresses that.
Like,
it gets awkward because we're just trying to play the substitution game because we're trying to like knock down problems on a weekly basis because whether or not we had the time or didn't find the time or make the time, and it's what you shared, we're always cobbling we're stitching together like patches to patches to patches and hoping to end up with a quilt instead of finding a way to stand back and be like, what are we really trying to do in the bigger picture with a bigger vision? I think for so many of us, it's like, let's just solve this week's issue. Like it's just, you got a headache, take some medicine. Like, here's an aspirin for your headache. Here's a Band-Aid for your cut. When it's like, actually, no, these are like serial migraines. And like, if I take all this medicine all the time, I'm worried about what I'm really getting hooked on. And I really appreciated the discipleship part being the overflow of this. Cause I think for so many youth pastors, there is this cry of, we want to make more disciples in our ministry, but they don't know where to start. So help us, because you've gathered a lot of perspectives from a lot of different levels and altitudes. If you were going to have all of us pump the brakes, we're listening to a podcast, we've got about 20 minutes left, let's pull back. What are some of the big vision things? So in the same way that like the book is trying to paint a bigger picture of Christian faithfulness and discipleship, what is something that a young youth minister that's like, okay, I'm hearing all this, I agree with all this, but I just don't know where to start because I feel like I'm only getting to see 20 yards ahead.
Right. Well, the first thing I would encourage them to say is be willing to do a very honest evaluation of where you are right now. Because there are
you individually or you in the ministry or both?
I would say, let's say in the ministry. It should go without saying that you as a youth minister need to be willing to go through kind of the ruthless evaluation of your soul on a very regular basis. I mean, we need to put that down as baseline, foundational. If you're not deepening your walk with Christ, you can't take people where you're not willing to go. Mm. And even in your own life, perhaps you need to go find that discipler who you're willing to, you know, put yourself into their sphere of leadership. And so if I can just tease that out for one more moment.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of guys out there in ministry that are just in the trenches that they feel all alone. And you feel all alone because you are all alone. Because you've never asked anybody to be your friend in ministry, or you've never asked anybody to be your discipler or your mentor or your coach or whatever language you want to use. And a lot of it is because of fear. You think, well, that guy at the bigger church or the more successful ministry or that person who's got a lot of mileage on their life, they don't have time for me. Mm. And I want to just encourage you that if you feel like that older brothers or sisters in the ministry don't have time for you, you're wrong. Mm. If you will reach out, they just didn't know that you needed them.
Right.
And they will likely carve out time to spend with you and to let you, you know, verbally vomit in front of them and dump your emotional truck. And then they will invest in you. But you got to let them know that you're needy at the moment. And chances are they will say, yeah, come on over. Let's grab coffee. Let's sit down with our spouses. Let's spend some time together. So, you know, take that step in your own life. But then in your ministry, you know, do that evaluation. Are we just working? And I think that there are three bad models of discipleship type of ministry, or three bad models of ministry. One is a plasticized Christianity where everybody just shows up happy all the time.
Pain-free.
Oh my gosh. I don't know what world you're living in, but I'd like to visit. And it is. It's just everybody show up and be happy. And we're not going to talk about our pain. And we're not going to talk about your addictions. And we're not going to talk about the kid who sits in the back who's struggling with same-sex attraction. And we're not going to talk about this kid over here whose parents have gone through, you know, his mom has gone through her third divorce. And I mean, we're not going to address it. The second is ministries that are just built on knowledge transfer. Mm-hmm. These are the ones that look like they're real discipleship oriented, but all they are is they're just making Jeopardy contestants about Jesus.
Okay.
And so, man, they pour theological knowledge and doctrinal knowledge and biblical knowledge into kids. And those kids can find Obadiah during a Bible drill like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But they're not prepared for the big decisions they're going to have to make.
Okay. Maybe the Bibles are open, but the questions are closed.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. And it's a type of ministry that they are answering the big questions of a previous generation. They became really good at answering a certain set of questions.
Right.
But nobody's asking those questions anymore. It's a new set of questions.
Yeah.
And then the third would be just a behavior modification type of ministry. It's kind of like the you know, that the metronome on a piano. Okay. I mean, it's just, you know, keep time, you know, just keep doing the same thing. And if what you find in your ministry is that we're just modifying behavior, we're just pouring knowledge into brain pans, we're just trying to make everybody happy. Well, that's those things, you know, real discipleship does change your behavior and it does make you more knowledgeable about the Bible. And it will bring about a joy that transcends the circumstances, but you can do all of that and never actually get to anybody's heart.
Mm.
So how you can positively do it, one thing is I would talk about that that you've got to prioritize the gospel beyond invitationalism.
Okay.
And gospel-centered ministry is a buzzword. We've almost made gospel such a buzzword that it has lost some of its meaning.
Can I just say that sometimes now I even have an allergy to it when people are like, guys, we're a gospel-centered ministry. And I'm almost like, but what were you before? Like, it's just like almost that immediate, like, wait, hold on. Yeah, no, you're right. Cause it's become the new community, right? Like, we used to be about having community. Well, now we're all settled on that. So now we're really gospel, which again, great word, powerful word, but everybody just discovered that we were supposed to do that, which makes me really concerned for what we were doing before. Hey guys, we're theological.
Really? Because everybody is.
But point taken, like they may, I mean, if we're honest, I mean, a lot of us may have participated in ministry models that were not very gospel-y. They may have been more behavior modification. So but how do we put the gospel front and center in a way that doesn't kind of slide into like gospel plus not dating or smoking or gospel, but with no dangerous questions?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it begins on kind of the negative side with being reminded that if you talk about the gospel in a sense of just invitationalism, we're just trying to get people over the threshold and out of hell and into heaven. Though that in and of itself, not a bad goal. I mean, that's a good goal. I want more people related to Jesus and less people related to darkness. But there's kind of an absence of living grace there. And eventually what that creates is inwardly focused, selfish, judgmental religious hacks. That if all you want is just to count how many people we got over the threshold and then you just become a spiritual accounting firm rather than then having a process and a plan as to how are we going to take those who have made a decision and deepen them in the gospel, that the gospel is the good news that applies to all of life. I am thoroughly convinced in the eternal security of a believer. You know, that when you get saved, it was the work of Christ. You're sealed by the Holy Spirit. Nothing can unbind you from that work that Christ has done for you. And so now, then how does the gospel continue to apply to every circumstance of life so that we keep holding up who Jesus, your identity in Christ when it comes to dating relationships, your identity in Christ when it comes to what the world thinks about technology or what your plans are for the future in terms of a career. And so emphasizing your identity in Christ and de-emphasizing that these are just a set of moral choices that Christians have to make.
Yeah. We just kind of, again, we cobbled them together, right? Like these are our Christian cobblings as opposed to, the very center of our very existence.
Because I would say, to spur off of that, it is that we have to teach students how to live with a spiritual, or I would dare say an eternal perspective. That in youth ministry, when we do just deal with the issue of the day, then we're teaching our students, you don't have to worry about eternal matters. Just look at the news. Just look at what's coming across Snapchat today that your friends are dealing with and go deal with that instead of infusing in them that you are supposed to look at life and you're supposed to look at people through the lens of eternity. This is what Paul said in 2 Corinthians, that he no longer looked at people the way he used to and that he views people in a different kind of way.
That's good. Which again, I think reflects on the hurt or the crisis in youth ministry leadership. Mm-hmm. Like our students are hungry for that telos, for that big picture, for that, where are we going? And if we have lived in the trenches of week to week, month to month, and never given them a bigger picture, then we've never fed them beyond the manna of week to week. And we are not a good dependent source for them because they're going to graduate. They're going to move to a job or a different town or to college or wherever, and they've got to find ways to give them a bigger picture, to articulate something that's broader than just, hey, we were glad you were here on Sunday. Make sure to come to the D-Now next month. You're not going to want to miss it. It's super fun, right? Yeah. And I think that's, it goes back to the very beginning of what you shared of, like, it's the storytelling of And all the youth ministers love to hear these stories from each other, but I don't think we share them with our students. Like you are what you celebrate. And if we just tell everybody, guys, we had 30% more kids come to camp this year instead of last year, that's a fine story, but it's an accounting story versus, you know, hey, Matthew wants to stand up and share what Philip has done and learned, or Philip wants to share and talk about what Matthew has done in his life. And I think there's just like, maybe this is a gross allergy word too, but like our marketing and youth ministry has been much more about the metrics and way less about the narratives that really matter to us. And I think we have to kind of reclaim that at the expense of saying, you know, like, yeah, we kept attendance this week. We submitted to the secretary. But hold on. Before I go into the church announcements this Sunday morning, can I just invite Ashley up here to talk about how much Lydia has meant in her life? Yeah. And we need better stories. We need better articulations of what's actually happening, because discipleship stuff does not make for good measurement, right? Like, it's really hard to measure, like, well, you know, Johnny is now a level 4 disciple, right? Until somebody integrates some kind of badge or belt system.
Yeah.
Like, all we can share are the episodes, the anecdotes, and the stories, and then we're hoping to anthologize those.
And so, yeah, and discipleship is incredibly difficult to quantify. Mm. And so as youth ministers, you're relating with a senior pastor, a lead pastor. Maybe you're part-time, he's full-time. Maybe you're both, you know, full-time, whatever the arrangement is. And you can't operate by metrics that he rejects. You've got to be on the same team here.
Yes, yes.
And so there is a sense at which you need to offer, maybe you're thinking in another direction, which is, you know, common, because youth ministers are by nature rogues and rebels. And so, and I've been both. And so I get that. And so there is a place where you can sit down with your pastor and talk about the formation by which you're operating the church, which is going to be born out of the metrics that you value. Because the system of your ministry is perfectly designed to give you the results you're getting. Mm. So whatever results you're getting, that's what your system is designed to give you. And so if you want different results, you're going to have to go back in and retrofit the system. Mm. When I had the opportunity a few years ago to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, where the Corvette manufacturing plant is located, one of them, the most beautiful car on planet Earth. And I can stand at the end of that assembly line and demand that they give me a toaster. And they'll give me a Corvette. I can demand that they give me a computer. They'll give me a Corvette, because that's what the system is designed to produce. And so that's one of the issues with you in youth ministry, is you have to look, what is our system designed to produce? Is it designed to produce hospitable disciples who want other people to know Jesus in a deep and personal way? Or is it designed to be greeters at a door who just get a bunch of bodies in a building for an hour and a half and then get them out of the building so that we can clean up after them? Mm. You know, which one are you designing? And I would encourage you, as you listen today, that you think deeply about, how are we building biblical hospitality into the life of students, so that they'll know how to not just welcome people onto a church campus, but welcome them into their homes and into their lives.
That's great. Well, Philip, one more question for you today, sir, just as we're kind of thinking through this and getting youth pastors excited about the prospect of maybe revisioning the entire process. Where in your practice and in your learnings do you feel like is maybe a missed on-ramp for a lot of young people when it comes to discipleship? Like, you, I'm saying that because I'm resonating with the word hospitality that you shared earlier. And if that's the one you want to go with, that's absolutely fine. But I think for a lot of us, we want these like deep, you know, we want deep disciples of Jesus. And so we're thinking like, well, they're going to read scripture a lot, or they're going to pick up, you know, big theological handbooks, but it may be even more hands-on than that, in a way that seems really exciting. And so I just, maybe are there some missed opportunities for a lot of youth ministers, some on-ramps into deeper discipleship that they shouldn't neglect maybe in the next coming months or season?
I'll say two, and I'll try to be brief with both of them. One is this issue of hospitality. Are you welcoming teenagers just onto the church campus, or are they visiting the homes of your actual members? Not just you as the youth minister, but like, are you training the adults that are leaders within your youth ministry? That youth ministry is something that happens 24/7, and you're not just saying it at orientation meetings, but you're actually inviting those leaders to your home so that they'll know what this looks like, so that then they can reproduce it by not just visiting Friday night light football game and waving to the kids that are on the bench or the girls that are cheering from the stands or whatnot, but that you're actually creating lives where they can welcome one another in deeply so that these teenagers can see adults in healthy Jesus following relationships and homes. The second is one that obviously I'm, you know, from the work that I've done, very passionate, and that is giving kids a global perspective of discipleship. And when I say global, I mean like geographic, political, socio kind of views of discipleship. We have a generation that is convinced that they can change the world because they do. I mean, how many teenagers do we see stories that start a Kickstarter campaign or a GoFundMe campaign in order to dig wells in third world countries or deliver shoes to needy children or raise funds for research of a disease? They're convinced that they can change the world because they do it. Yeah. And so how about let's infuse, reignite the global section of the Great Commission into their minds, that you don't, that you can tie all of this into the Jesus work that's already going on in Bulgaria, where there's a loss of religious freedom, or you can tie it all in into Western Europe, where cathedrals are being turned into coffee shops because nobody goes to them any longer. And you can get tied into the global work of disciple making. And I think that that will ignite their spiritual imaginations as to how Jesus can use them in the world today.
That's good. Well, Philip, thank you so much for sharing today. Those are some excellent takeaways for us as we kind of think about what it means to be a disciple making pastor and minister inside the context of our local church. From you, what are some things we need to know next? What are you working on? What's your new project or challenge or career change or whatever new thing you've got going on? Yeah. Maybe you haven't even thought of fully yet. You're just, you know, rehashing it out.
Yeah. Well, I on two ends of the spectrum. One, I've moved into this new role with the Baptist World Alliance. We work with 239 Baptist unions in 125 countries and territories. Wow. And so my work is just to help network churches into there, into this kind of missional partnership. So if you're a church leader that you'd like to know what would it look like for me to be related to the global family of the church, you can just hit me up and we can talk through what that looks like. On the other side, I just continue to write. I write fun things and I write serious things. And so I'm, I've been noodling around with an idea about writing a trilogy of books on monsters, anti-heroes, and apocalyptic tales and the spiritual implications of those.
Okay.
And so, I'm just going to keep working at that and see if I can't get a publisher to bite on that hook.
I like it. I like it. Well, if you get that put together, I know that we've got some fantasy loving youth pastor readers that would love to hear more about the anti-heroes and monsters. I love it.
There you go.
Well, thank you again so much for your time, sir. And thanks for being a part of our podcast today.
Absolutely. It's been
great. Super fun. Dr. Philip Nation not only dropping the knowledge of what it means to lead well in ministry, but tantalizing truths about a fiction series that we drop in our way. Dr. Nation, Philip, we thank you, sir, for your wisdom, your insight, and your encouragement into the ways in which we lead alongside in the ways of making disciples in the church and how that is a spiritual discipline and practice for those of us, both in ministry and some kind of level of calling and profession, but also for all of us that follow in the name of Jesus. Thanks for painting that picture for us. If you want to check out more, the show notes below have some of the books that he mentioned and referenced and the places you can find and follow him. But until then, we'll see you next week on the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast.
I'm going to turn your world upside down. and are showing you things you've never seen before. Are you ready? Get set.
I'm in Florida, so, and it's winter, or yeah. Well, it's spring, so I'm in a long sleeve shirt and shorts. So this
Perfect. Is that's it. It's, yeah. It's summer garb or winter garb.